You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome into a Monday night post-game edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We haven't done too many of those recently. I'm Gavin Shaw, your Brooklyn Nets expert, self-proclaimed, along with the, oh yeah, he hates monikers, that's all I'll say about him, the Joshua Bass. Josh. You seemed angry when I first called you about this Nets game losing their 10th and 11 games, but at least Quincy Acey got 31 minutes, so that's something to cheer you up.
Yeah, I'm really glad for Quincy's development. He's really going to become a low-end role player with all the Atkinson's development being put into him.
8-5-5-3. Yeah, we were talking...
Triple-double threat, Quincy Acey.
Quadruple-double threat. We were, like, talking about him. Like, he must have, like, something on Kenny Atkinson. Like, I don't know if he, like, caught him, like, committing a crime or something. Like, I don't want to just throw accusations out there. But, like, AC caught Atkinson in something, and now Atkinson is bound to play him for over 30 minutes a game. Because I frankly can't figure out any other explanation for, like, I get the floor spacing, but, like, I don't know. It's been limited minutes, but Dante Cunningham just seems like a more functional version of Quincy Acey, and obviously, like, the Nets like to bring guys along slowly, but, like, those two, like, just off the bat should probably be playing the same amount of minutes. And you could argue I'm overrating Dante Cunningham, but if you said that, I would argue you are blind and haven't watched Quincy Acey this season.
Yeah, I mean, Dante Cunningham's, like, the fourth best player on the Nets at this point. He played 12 minutes in the first half, played well, and then 0 minutes in the second half. So I'm just kind of confused as to what he could have done better to get minutes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's like, none of the minutes distribution this entire game was based on merit. It would just seem completely random. The starting lineup is horrible. And I'm questioning whether Atkinson can make adjustments on the fly because the team just seems lost. And I'm frankly very pissed off.
Yeah, well, I guess, I don't know. I guess like the question is like, Who do you play more? Like Dinwiddie and Crabb, the way he, I know, sorry, you're going to go into that, but just give me a second to preface it. Dinwiddie and Crabb both played a good amount. I think they should both be out there as much as possible the way Crabb's playing right now. Jared Allen, obvious guy who should play more. Damari Carroll, obvious guy who should play less, but then you start going through the bench and like there's just not that many guys. Like I'd argue Harris should get over 30 minutes a game, but what do you think?
Okay, James Webb III needs to start and play 35 minutes. I think we all agree on that.
What?
Stauskas has not been playing.
Stauskas!
Okay, he's objectively terrible, but at least still we have him. And when the rest of the team is playing terribly and has no energy, just put him in. Whitehead has been shuttled back and forth from Long Island this entire season. He has gold membership on the LIRR. Give the guy a shot to play consistent minutes. We're not going anywhere as is. I don't need to see Quincy Acey playing 35 minutes a night. I don't need to see D'Lo just lose the ball and get it stripped from him by Avery Bradley three times a night. Let someone else play, see what we have, see if there can be a spark. And if not, we move on. But right now, there's just doing the same thing over and over again is the definition of insanity. So, and people might say that we're doing that for this podcast, but
yeah.
Why is Kenny Atkinson not making adjustments?
If not, we riot. I think we should just stand outside Barclays and picket.
We'll be the only two fans outside there.
Yeah, maybe. No, I'm with you. And like, they just need like a dramatic shift. Like this is far and away their greatest funk of the season. And they've gone, from a team that was, kind of on the outskirts of the playoff race to now like I think they're one game ahead of the Atlanta Hawks who were like not so long ago, the worst.
They're one game ahead of the worst record in the, entire league, and I think they'll probably have a top four worst record by the time the season's over with, because this team is a mess right now.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Is it wild, though? Because there's no adjustments. I mean, Quincy Acey, Atkinson has him out there for some reason to have that five-out offense. He can't hit a three to save his life. The reason you have a five-out offense and you can play undersized guys up a position is if they can defend their position. AC was getting abused on absolutely every pick and roll. Guys like Lou Williams, Avery Bradley, Austin freaking Rivers were going right at him and pretending like he was a 6'2 guy, turnstile. They had no fear of him. They were scoring at will at the rim every time. Atkinson decided not to switch up his pick and roll strategy for God knows what reason, because it was working so well the first 100 times they scored. I just don't know what he's seeing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, logically, like, if your goal is to win games, like, you would be switching Jared Allen and AC's, like, minute rotation. And I'm kind of wondering if they have some internal minute limitation for Allen, and maybe, like, over that hot stretch, he was playing a little bit more than they wanted him to, and they're cutting into that now just because they don't want to risk putting too big of a load on a guy who obviously doesn't carry that much weight on him for his height, but is really tall. And as we've seen with Kristaps Porzingis, those guys, even if they're lanky, like they are kind of vulnerable to injury in a way other guys aren't in his rookie season. I don't know.
Well,
that's just like a theory.
Is he ever going to play 25 minutes? I mean, it's just ridiculous. You have to play the people that you have eventually. You play your best players.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, like,
I don't know. He's
averaging 18 minutes a game. It's not like he's under some stressful workload.
Yeah,
I think they're just so conservative with injuries, and then their guys always get injured regardless, and then they suck when they come back from injury.
Yeah, well, Josh, you're a little emotional right now, but like I respect.
I am
it
emotional because I
think you're right. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I've been following this team for 16 years. The best 2 years of that entire stretch were the first two seasons. It's been all downhill since then. I've had Tinder 12-70, where we didn't even get the first pick and get John Wall. We got Derek Favors, who we traded for D-Will, that entire Billy King disaster. And now I have to hear all about how D'Angelo Russell and Jahlil Okafor and Caris LeVert are the saviors when they can't even lead this team to 25 wins.
Yeah, no, I love
it. And I worked 11 hours today, so excited to come home and watch this game, and the Nets just get destroyed by the Clippers.
No, I know.
Montrezl Harrell.
I mean, you're talking about the GOAT, but yeah, no, I'm with you, and I think it's time to officially announce I am becoming a Knicks fan again, Josh, and I'm pedaling away.
And the decision.
Yeah, that's after the Kristaps Porzingis injury, so you know things are bad at Brooklyn. But
Montrezl Harrell's actually good though. So
yeah, he saw.
he actually is good. He'd be the Nets' best big man by far, and Atkinson would probably bury him behind AC and Mozgov, but jeez. Regardless.
No, that's fair. So clearly, like, a tough night for the Nets. And, like, I don't know. Like, I want to give them, like, maybe I'm being too generous with towards Atkinson because I don't know, like, relatively, like, neutral on, like, the Nets' future relative to you. But, I mean, like, the only thing I'd say is, like, when you take Rondé and Caris out of the situation, like, he is working with, like, a pretty barren roster. And, like, but there are obvious changes that, like, need to be made. So at the same time, like, I'm with you, but, like, there's a reason, like, it's so disastrous, and it also makes sense that, like, a young team would get down after losing all these games in a row, but I think what the most frustrating thing to me is, like, just game after game after game, they've come out and given up, like, 35 points in the first quarter defensively. Like, at some point, like, that, the switch just has to be on from the start. Like, that's what really worries me, that, and this is, I mean, I feel like we're, like, on a loop, because we talk about this every podcast now. But, like, I don't get how that's not there after this whole losing streak.
No, I completely agree with you, and I think that the losses aren't what's bothering me. It's the way they're happening. Just coming out and allowing 66 points in the first half to this Clippers team, and every game being down by 20 in the first half. I mean, the first half against New Orleans was absolutely embarrassing. Rajon Rondo getting layup after layup should never happen, and Kenny Atkinson should have been embarrassed. Instead of rolling out the same starting five with Quincy, AC, Damari Carroll, and Jared Allen, a trio that's just not going to work. I mean, you're putting so much of a burden on Spencer Dinwiddie and Alan Crabb, who's actually pretty good tonight. You have to put your guys in the best position to succeed, and that doesn't necessarily always mean your stupid five-out system.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about Spencer Dinwiddie and the load he's carrying, but first I want to put out a shout-out to our boss, David Locke. Had ESPN's excellent Kevin Pelton on the podcast yesterday, and they kind of broke down both the Eastern and Western Conference races. And I feel like sometimes during these NBA seasons, and maybe this podcast is an example of that, beat writers and pundits and potters like ourselves get too into the nitty gritty. And this is kind of a big space out, like, wide look at the league and, like, who is really in position to contend and who's, like, really falling off and, like, who's going to end up with the number one pick. Hint, it could be the Cavs, the way the Nets are playing. But regardless of all that, I encourage you to check out the podcast to get a more macro look at the NBA. Kevin Pelton, one of the best in the business. Obviously, David is as well. So please check that out. Spencer Dinwiddie. I wrote it down while I was watching the game. There were just so many possessions, especially in like the second quarter when the Nets were kind of trying to work their way back and played pretty well, actually, that Dinwiddie was the only guy out there who could create offense. And you'd see every time he'd dribble around and he'd create a little bit of an advantage and pass the ball. And like, obviously what a guy has to do in that situation is take advantage of a scrambling defense and attack the help. And it would just go totally static and the ball would stop and then they'd swing it back around and Dinwiddie would have to work his ass off for another 5-6 seconds again, pass it again. And his teammates just kept letting him down time after time after time. And I get that that's a personnel thing. And ideally you'd have Caris LeVert in there next to him, or you'd have a D'Angelo Russell that can play good enough defense to stay on the floor. But when that's not the reality, it goes to Dinwiddie, who I, again and again and again, we've said it, but it has never taken on a star level creator role before the season. And suddenly like the weight of a franchise is on his shoulders. So I think that's kind of unfair to him. And it's frustrating to watch because it led to so many possessions where they were taking terrible shots in the final few seconds of the shot clock against a Clippers team that's good defensively, but not world beaters.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when your entire team is pretty bad at shooting threes and also pretty bad at getting to the basket. I mean, I don't think Dinwiddie had his best game tonight. I thought he was pretty sloppy with the ball. It didn't take advantage of some of the creases that he did have. But a 4 of 7 night from 3-point range
didn't salvage
his stat line. But I have to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's been the Nets' most consistent player this season. And he did put his teammates in good chances to succeed. But sometimes the ball goes to a guy like Quincy Acey and Damari Carroll, and they can't really make stuff happen. So then once they're kind of wasting time on the shot clock, it has to go back to Dinwiddie and then work back at square one, and all of a sudden there's only 5 seconds left on the shot clock. So I do feel bad for him a little bit, and I think Rondé and Caris are going to help that out, but it's a systemic problem in this Nets team. I mean, you can't play this free-flowing system of offense that Kenny Atkinson is preaching when you have no talent on the court.
No, his
system, the reason why it worked so well in Atlanta when he was with Budenholzer is that they had five guys that were all at least pretty good and all had their own niche. And now they have one and a half on a given night. I mean, besides Dinwiddie, there's no one that's consistently bringing it. I mean, Damari Carroll is equally as likely to go 2 of 16 from the field as he is to go 6 of 12. You can't just rely on that.
No, I'm with you. And I think the biggest thing in Atlanta, and I'm happy you brought that up, Josh, was that, I mean, on top of the fact that they just have, like, great shooting across the board, is not only could their bigs legitimately space the floor in a way the Nets bigs haven't been able to this season, but they also were creative off the dribble. Like Al Horford and Paul Millsap both, if you go out on them, they can drive by you and they can make a play. And
they're both excellent passers.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the same philosophy that you take over from the Spurs. I mean, like, five-out basketball is great in theory, but for it to work practically, and you said this earlier in the podcast, I don't want to just bogart your point, but it takes guys, like five guys who are creative with the basketball and have basketball intelligence. I'm not saying the Nets don't have guys like that, because even someone like Alan Crabb, who we've trashed on a lot this season, like I noticed him like making some of those plays on the run, and like especially early in the game, like it kind of stopped later on. He was making like smart cuts to the basket and like finding holes in the defense. And later in the game, D'Lo had a nice backdoor that Dinwiddie found him on, but it's just not consistent enough. And again, the most inexcusable thing is just for that motor not to be there, because the whole philosophy of the Nets behind playing these guys limited minutes is like, when you're in the game, you got to be playing your ass off and you got to be buzzing. And it's like they just lost that motivation the last few weeks and haven't had it. So with that being said, like we kind of got into it, and you want to suggest rotation changes. I'd be playing Dante Cunningham, who's been working his butt off more. I'd be playing Whitehead more, who clearly, if nothing else, is locked in every single second he's on the floor. I know you were joking about James Webb, but even with him, like I wrote down like a few times.
No,
Josh, he has to play 40 minutes a game. He's the future. I'm not saying 40 minutes a game, only sarcastically. I think he should get some time just because he's energetic. I'm just saying, while the guys aren't healthy, would you rather have him or AC, honestly?
Yeah, like, you're energetic, but I'm not going to have you go out there and play 10 minutes for the Nets.
I'd be good. Dude, they should try it.
Not James Webb.
You love James Webb. You're his biggest fan. Fine. When they signed him, you said he's going to go down as the greatest player in Nets history. Did you or did you not say that?
I said he's going to go down as the greatest James Webb in Nets history.
Oh, okay. You should have clarified.
But I think it's a good point. Cunningham needs 20 minutes a game. Carroll, just when he's playing the three, can't create anything off the dribble, and that really limits the Nets, especially with RHJ out, because you don't have a creating four there. So him playing the three with a combination of, let's say, AC or Allen or Cunningham and Okafor at the 4 and 5 is just not going to work. So until RHJ comes back, and hopefully that's the game right after the All-Star break, Carroll should exclusively be playing the four.
Yeah. And they, I don't know. I don't really, do you have any more thoughts on this one? If not, we could maybe talk about the Pacers game quickly and like how
they finish up. Yeah, just D'Angelo Russell. I don't care that he scored 8 or 10 points in the fourth quarter. I don't care because if you start playing when the game is down 25 and the game's already over, that's meaningless to me. All I remember from this game is that he was absolutely abysmal in the first half. The ball getting ripped from him by Avery Bradley. And all of his turnovers it's not like they're aggressive passes and he's trying to make the right play. He just loses it in the half court, completely lazy. Then Jahlil Okafor, the guy is probably still reacting that the game is over. I mean, he's 10 seconds late on every rotation. It's just, I can't watch him anymore. His defense is so bad. On offense, he needs to take 10 seconds to set up every drive. I mean, you know what? Maybe just go for a quick move like Montrezl Harrell was doing instead of taking 10 seconds to do your stupid little crossover, crab dribble, get to the rim, four different fakes, and then get blocked.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I had the thought this game that, like, and this is, like, really genuinely the first time I thought this about Okafor since he came over the Nets. And it was oh, this is why he kind of got banished in Philly. Like, because it's like almost like a circle of hell watching him play. And I feel bad for bagging on the guy because he clearly works hard and like has a ton of talent. But it's such a catch 22 because
how do we know he works hard?
I don't know. I'm assuming he does. But I mean, I assume he wouldn't have gotten to the point that he did in basketball if he didn't work hard to some degree. But you get enthralled by his offense, and he really is a talented offensive player. Like, I mean, I know you can quibble about how quick he gets into it, but he can score on anyone. And as far as instant offense goes, he's as good as any backup big in the NBA. But defensively, who would you say is better as far as backup big men?
I mean, Montrezl Harrell just completely ate his lunch. Just because you're good at post-up scoring, just because you're decent at post-up scoring doesn't mean anything.
I'm just saying offensively, I think I would make better.
But the way the league is going, it's all about being a good pick-and-roll scorer, which he's horrible at. He doesn't know how to time his rolls at all. He's not an explosive finisher at the rim.
I mean, but again, like I don't mind the Nets like kind of figuring out what they had in him and like who like it's looking.
Yeah, I don't.
It's looking less and less likely they're going to bring him back this offseason based on how he's played. But I mean, what I was trying to say, like, it's such a catch 22 because again, like, anything he gives you on offense, he gives back on defense. And my concern is that, like, D'Lo, a guy who they're obviously much more invested in, has a little bit of those same traits on the defensive end. And again, like, this all comes with the qualifier: young players are bad on defense, particularly when they're surrounded by other bad defenders, which these guys both are almost every time they're on the court. So, like, I mean, some of this stuff, like, you just have to, like, you can't overreact to. But I mean, you have to mention it, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think by your third year in the league, you should be kind of figuring out things on defense. You shouldn't continue to be an absolute sieve if that's what you're going to be in the long run. I think on defense, especially, I think offense takes a lot longer to develop just so you get more crafty as time goes by. But defense, you kind of are what you are by your third year in the league. And Jahlil Okafor and D'Angelo Russell have proven that they're both horrible on D. And I think that they're kind of like, they're like a bad crab cake. I mean, you have a crab cake. There's a little bit of crab in there with some good parts, but the rest of it is just imitation BS crab filler. And now I'm not talking about Allen Crab. And that's what Jahlil Okafor and D'Angelo Russell are. There are some bites that are going to be good, but on the whole, it's disappointing.
Yeah, and Allen Crab Cake did play well this game, so we're not taking shots at him. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you. I'm not arguing any of that. All right, just wanted to have like a general programming note. Josh and I had a really good conversation tonight about the direction of the podcast, and I want to be the first to announce we are ending our operations immediately. Just kidding. We decided we're going to structure our episodes a little bit more, and I don't know. We're trying to figure out ways to keep it from getting stale. Not necessarily we've gotten that feedback, but we both feel like it's getting that way, which is kind of a standard recap driven format. So we're going to try and mix it up and have it maybe be a little bit more like story oriented and kind of talk about like the biggest like Nets like news and like stories and like maybe some more insight into guys on the team, and then also have maybe a segment, an episode that goes more around the NBA, and like we're just kind of spitballing stuff. And again, as always, we'd love suggestions. You can hit us up on Twitter @LockedOnNets, you know our handles at this point. Yeah, so just let us know if there are specific things you want to see and you would like to be different. But we're trying to come up with ways to diversify it, and I'm confident these final few weeks of the season we're going to be able to do that and have a much better product for you guys. All right, yeah, I think that's about all I can say about this game. A pretty disgusting effort overall. The Nets have one game before All-Star break against the Indiana Pacers, and I don't know. I have a feeling it's going to be really telling in terms of how the rest of the season is going to finish up for the Nets and like whether or not they can play kind of a coherent game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any expectations. I think Oladipo will probably go off for, I'd say, between 35 and 38, and I don't see any way that they're going to effectively guard Sabonis and Miles Turner. We'll see what happens after the All-Star break when hopefully RHJ and Karis are back, but obviously with the Nets, I mean, they both missed about 2 weeks, and we get zero updates on their timetable because obviously they respect their fans so much. And I mean, I think with their winning history, we just have to give them the benefit of the doubt. I mean, when you won 20 games last year, you already have 19 wins at the All-Star break this year. I mean, can't you just see the progress?
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to go down that road with you. But even if it's warranted, the Nets have played the Pacers well all year.
I'm going to be less angry for next pod.
Okay, cool. All right. No. I mean, I'm sure. I feel like people listening like probably really do appreciate it because this is how everyone feels. And I don't know. I think sometimes people who go to journalism school like myself get too far up their own ass and aren't willing to express that level of emotion. So I like that you're bringing it to the pod, Josh. So I don't know. I'd be obviously a lot more confident if the Nets were fully healthy. It seemed like the three times they played the Pacers this year, I think they played them three times, right?
I think it was three. I know it was on opening night. That was
a loss. And then the overtime game.
Loss in December.
Which was a great game. Maybe the best game all year the Nets have been in. Not in terms of how they played, but just like quality of game itself.
They've been some good games this year.
Yeah, they've had a few. All right, so I think they'd ideally have more firepower to go back and forth with Indiana, but it seems like they've been knocking on the door of beating them all season. And like, call me naive, but I don't know. I think they'll come out fired up, or if they don't, then there are bigger questions to be asked. All right, I think getting 22 minutes out of that husk of a game is good enough. Josh, it's the floor is yours. If you have any final thoughts, if not, we'll wrap this one up.
I think we did a good job covering it. And listen, I'm disappointed because these guys on the team, I mean, people consider them building blocks, and I haven't seen anything to show that if they are building blocks, that the tower is not going to crumble down in a couple of years.
Yeah, I don't want to keep repeating myself, but I think there are guys who have proven they can kind of get it done on both ends. And maybe I'm giving Dinwiddie too much credit defensively, but I think again, you give Dinwiddie a smaller role and you surround him with more talent. I think he's a keeper. I think Joe Harris is absolutely.
But how are they going to get that talent, Gavin?
I'm not Sean Marks, Josh. I mean, they have to figure out a way to
what?
Do it. Spoilers.
I thought you were a 6'10 New Zealander.
I have had the accent the whole time around. I can't believe it, and no one else called me out on it. I mean, you gotta win with like culture over time, and it's hard to do that when you're losing year after year after year, and obviously you didn't have your draft pick for 3 years. I mean, and again, this is like kind of the curse of Billy King, because even when the Nets, I would argue, like, if not expertly managed, they've been one of the most well-run teams in the league since Sean Marks took over, but they were dug in such a significant hole, even when things are looking up. And I think both of us agree before this stretch, like, I mean, you a little bit less so than me, but I think to some degree we're both pretty optimistic about the future of this team. And it's just one stretch like this throws all that into doubt. So it's going to be really telling how this team finishes the season. I think getting Hollis Jefferson back, getting LeVert back, and getting Lynn back, obviously not until next season, but that will make this team look a lot more competitive, and suddenly you have a much more normal NBA rotation. And obviously, again, the priority this offseason has to be adding another competent big guy next to Jared Allen, because right now that rotation is a joke, but like that's not like anything we didn't know going into the season.
I think that Nets fans were so scarred by Billy King that anything that even resembles a normal front office looks like it's the Spurs with Greg Popovich and RC Buford to them. And I think it's I'm not going to anoint Sean Marks right now, all of a sudden. I think he's done a decent job. I think Kenny Atkinson's done a pretty good job, regardless of me being critical with him tonight. But we're not going to really be able to judge them for another year or so. So this time period, we can say they're doing all the right things, but we really don't know that until one or two of these players pan out. And if Kenny Atkinson is as good as a developmental coach that people say he is, then it will be fine, because some of these young talents like LeVert and D'Lo and RHA will really become high-level starters at the very least. But if not, and he kind of flounders, then we're back to square one with absolutely no future, and have to restock the cupboard through the draft. And maybe we have some players on bloated contracts by then, and the direction of the franchise is in doubt. So right now we're just at too early of a stage to really tell how good a job Sean Marks is doing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, either way, like, it'll take a few years, and like, I think they're going to be picking in the lottery, like maybe not the next, like, I mean, you don't know. I mean, stuff changes in the NBA so quickly, so it's foolish to make like a proclamation like that. But again, even next year, if you get that lottery pick, you nail it at the end of the first round this year, like, suddenly you're starting to have a more complete team. And the big question is, like, how can you get that standout superstar? And that's obviously the biggest issue of losing all these games and putting together a roster that potentially next season with better health isn't going to be at the bottom of the NBA. Like, you miss out on the opportunity to get that blue chip talent. And if you never get that blue chip talent, how are you great? So, I mean, it's the same issues we've been talking about all year. I don't want to belabor the point any longer, because I feel like most people still listening probably want to jump out the nearest office building at this point. So thank you for sticking with us this long. If you had, for Josh and I, we really appreciate you tuning in. Again, we think things are going to get better for both the Nets and the podcast in the coming weeks. Until then, be well. Peace out.